Finally, a perfect use for resting bitch face. My name is Jason. I'm the last manager of the last video store in the universe. And when I'm not managing the video store here in sunny tropical Akron, Ohio, I'm trying to survive a civil war in the United States. Will fiction become fact? It seems like it very well might. I think that leads to some of the dissatisfaction with this film that I'm seeing online. Am I as dissatisfied as some of the muckety-muck, uppity-up film critics that you probably listen to? Another podcast sponsored by Bill Simmons. We'll see. We'll see. But before we get to that, you could get these instant reactions even more instantaneously and extended if you're a patron. Patron all levels. Starting with our video club members over at patreon.com/bingemovies, receive these in advance. Sometimes it's mere hours. Sometimes it's several days. Just depends on the schedule here. Depends on how many shifts I have to pick up from our lowly youth who are both lowly in morals, work ethic, and pay here at Binge Movies, the last video store in the universe. If you've never listened to an instant reaction before, I go to the movie theater and I then instantly react to it. It's not a perfect science, but a science nonetheless. Here I am thinking about this. Okay, no spoilers whatsoever. Spider-Man does not appear. I'm just going to say that right straight off the rip. There is no Spider-Man Easter egg anywhere in this movie, and I was greatly disappointed. For the last 15 years, all I've done is watch Marvel movies, and I don't know how to watch anything else now. Is there an Easter egg? If there isn't, is it even a film anymore? Is there something being referenced off camera that we all know, wink, wink, nod, nod, but we can't quite say it because we maybe don't have the rights yet? No? Then it's not entertainment, folks. So this guy's made a movie and doesn't have any of those things that movies have to have now. Instead, it has characters and plot and something on its mind. Well, my tongue is firmly in my cheek. My reaction to this film is, let's start with what the film is about. So civil war has broken out within the United States. The United States has been divided up, you know, more or less into three or four different territories. And they've essentially formed their own succession nations, and they are waging conflict against. They're not a unified successionist state. Some of them are, some of them aren't, but they're waging war against what's left of the United States and a president who has turned violent and autocratic against his own people, played by my dude from Parks and Rec. So Kirsten Dunst plays a wartime photographer who's gone around the world shooting war and conflict and genocide, and now has the dubious task of photographing it in her own country. She's paired with a reporter. They pick up a mentor, writer figure of hers along the way, and a young girl, aspiring war photographer, who looks at Kirsten Dunst's character as being one of her inspirations and one of her heroes. The mission is really a suicide mission to travel from New York to D.C. to try to get an interview with the president on the eve of what D.C. is calling the greatest military victory in the history of humanity. And as some of the primary rivals to what's left of the United States is known as the Western Front. And they are, about 150 miles, give or take, outside of D.C. And their efforts seem to be stalling. And that's all we really know. And then we're thrown right into the action of it all. And it's about the road trip they take and the memories they make along the way. And really the horrors that they see. And there's different societies, different enclaves of people, different areas of the country that are handling it kind of differently. But for the most part, everything is in ruins. It's a full, you have not well-regulated militias kind of running wild. And then, of course, you also have the U.S. military and their traditional fatigues. And you have people who just have just gone completely off their rocker, who are, you know, out in the woods somewhere. And you have little places that are off the beaten path. So they're not as affected. They're not as war-torn as your major metropolitan areas. And that's what the movie is about. So I'll just get down to it. I think if what you want is you want him, Garland, to make those prescient critiques of society that he did in some of his other works, like Ex Machina and Annihilation and some of his other stuff, he doesn't do that as much here. He's not using this as a film to critique the United States and its political process, to critique the United States and what the U.S., you know, what a second Trump term would mean for the United States, or this, that, or whatever. I mean, there are nods and winks to things. There are, you know, there are lines that you could draw with the dots that he has laid down, but it's not explicit whatsoever. And so I think if you're saying, okay, you know, I want, you know, some of his work feels like, okay, this guy's speaking to us from the future as a warning. And in essence, that is what the movie is. It is a warning that this is what civil war looks like. But what it really is, more so than that, is it is a recontextualization, right? So in the United States, at least for the last 50, 60 years, we have become accustomed to seeing horrific images of war-torn nations who are experiencing genocide, civil war, plain old war, religious wars, race wars, whatever it may be, on the nightly news, in our newspapers, back when we had newspapers, on Google, on Reddit, through Instagram, you're just flipping past these images one way or the other. And because they've always been a continent away and maybe even several oceans away, it has provided us with an arm's length view of the tragedies of the world. We observe it from a distant, sort of emotionally unaffected ambivalency, from a comfortability, right? That's historically been true of the United States in the last, you know, after World War II, essentially, and even during World War II. And we've had flashes of really having to deal with things that directly involved us, obviously, the Second World War and Vietnam and Korea. But there, you know, there's always been conflict in the Middle East, for instance, and as it goes on today, or parts of the Balkan states in Europe as it goes on today. And so we've sort of been removed from it, and except for where it has served our own interest, either, you know, as a people or as a political body. And so there's a distance between us and the reality of what we're seeing. There is a cold, compassionless disconnect. And sometimes all it takes is recontextualization. So you take these images that we've been used to seeing in places like Baghdad and Beirut and Palestine and Gaza, Israel and Ukraine and anywhere else where we've seen Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, South Korea, any places where for the last 50, 60 years, Vietnam, where we've seen this kind of imagery of whole cities entirely devastated, economies collapse, inflation through the roof, people begging for water and milk and bread, just the bare basics to give their babies, people starving in the streets, smoke and soot and fire and ember and garbage and trash and unstable infrastructure and utilities collapsing and all of those things that we see and that people are experiencing right now as I speak, recontextualize that in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, in DC, in New York, in West Virginia. You know, all those places are in my backyard, by the way, if you're not familiar with my geography. So maybe that has a little extra bonus effect on me because I'm like, I know some of these places. And now all of a sudden those images that were haunting and terrible and awful, but we were sort of removed from them. We can no longer be removed from them. They're recontextualized. for us. And so it opens this up to a new set of experiences and perspective. It's the man who hates trans people until his son says that he's trans or gay or whatever the case may be, or, you know, people who make fun of, you know, other people for having autism until they have a child who has autism, right? It's like walking in somebody else's shoes. Now it's your child. What are you going to do with that, right? Now it's your son, it's your daughter, it's your baby, right? You're the one who needs disability. You're the one who needs Social Security. You're the one who needs a government handout or a bailout or whatever it may be. Now, all of a sudden, does that change your tune? And so that's really what this movie is let's recontextualize it. What would that look like in this country? And then what would war journalism look like in this country if everything was falling down? And that is very, very broad. And it could seem as if it's too difficult to really capture a story with such a continent's worth of conflict, almost a continent's worth, but a very large country's worth of conflict. And so he does, there's another smart move that's done here, which is, okay, first we recontextualize, second we localize. So we localize the story in this vehicle with these four characters who all represent different facets of media, different facets of human personality and how human personalities respond and process to grief and trauma and tragedy and horror, right? So Kirsten Dunst's character is beyond world weary, right? She is almost like a sponge. She's been wrung out by the things that she's seen. She's chased so hard after getting the photo, getting the next great photograph, it has come at the cost of her soul, essentially. And the older writer, New York Times writer who's there, you know, he's at the end of his life in one way or another, right? Because journalism could get you killed in this world, as it can in ours, but in the United States in particular. And, you know, he's the sage. He's the guy who has lived it. He's the guy with the intuition. He's the guy with the sense. He's the guy that, like, knows what it feels like when something's about to go bad. He's the guy that can read the room better than anybody. He is the expert person. But he represents a bygone era. And then you have this young person who is both eagerly wants to be a part of the action and is also horrified at the action she's seen and horrified at herself at what she's seen. And there's a dichotomy between her and Kirsten Dunst's character of the Spaney character and Dunst's character, because they're almost mirror images of each other. They are the same person at different points in the timeline. This is you at 23. This is you at 43, right? This is you before war. This is you after a lifetime's war, where you just passively watch as evil and atrocities are committed, and you just snap the photo, and you make no great moral judgments. You can't even process it emotionally. You just take the photo, turn it in. The guy writes a story, and we move on. And so by localizing it within these four characters and their relationships with themselves and each other and the complicated wrinkles of who they are as both thrill seekers and cockroaches in a way, they're buzzards in a way, but they're also upholding truth in a way. So the movie's, I think, much more about the complicated nature that of American media, period, news media, period, global news media, period, has with war, right? It is something that is both needs to be reported on and is extremely devastating to the human soul to witness, but there would be no need for Reuters to this extent or Associated Press or the New York Times if horrible things didn't happen. And so I think it's wrestling with a lot of that. It's wrestling with the underbelly of America, yes, but it's doing it through this very particular lens of media. And I think that's really disappointing for a lot of people who are expecting this guy's going to write the ultimate critique of the modern era, the post-truth era. That's not what this movie is. This movie is set in a place and in a time where the Civil War has already happened. It doesn't fucking matter how you got there. It doesn't, like, that's the point. It doesn't really matter how you got there. The events aren't important. It's more of like, you know, bad 1950s sci-fi TV show shit where it's like, in a short time, this could be us. Da, da, da. You know what I mean? It's more a pocket of time. There's some thematic stuff I want to talk about, but I think it will take away from the film, so I'll put that into my extra category for the patrons. It's hard. This one's hard to grade because I think there's so much expectation piled upon it because of the creator, because of the director, and because of the cast. I think the cast does an excellent job. I think Kirsten Dunst is almost one note to the point where you're like, okay, lady, come on. And then just when it's beginning to be kind of really grating, which is part of the intent of her character, is for you to kind of like, you just kind of want to shake her, you know, and like, wake up. When she starts to hit other notes in her performance, it's really at just the perfect time. Spaney is as the youngest person. It's just excellent. Excellent, 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 excellent. And where her character goes, I think, is excellent. Honestly, all the performances are great in this movie. I can't think of a bad performance anywhere in the film. It's tense. It's taut. It's bloody. It's brutal. It's unrelenting. It's unmerciful. But also has a sort of a weird dreamlike quality to it. There's a surrealism to it that I don't think always serves the movie's best interest. There's two scenes. Well, this happens a couple of times. He abuts a couple of scenes a couple of times where it's that harsh contract between absolute silence and then bam, rapid fire and machine gun fire. It's like old Stanley Kubrick sort of stuff. It's partly what makes like Full Metal Jacket, some of his other movies, so effective. Scorsese does it a lot too. If you've seen a lot of movies, you can kind of feel it coming. You're like, okay, well, we've had dead silence for the last 90 seconds, so the next scene's going to start with something very, very, very loud. And there's a lot of lingering shots, and there's a lot of like, and some of the soundtrack choices and when they kick in, it doesn't always work for me. There is a disconnect in the film where not every scene really, especially through the second act, I would say, it just kind of gets a little sloppy, is not the right word. It gets, my sense of the movie is that this is not his sharpest material. And I would imagine that it has to do with the scope of the film being bigger than anything he's ever done before and the money amount being bigger than anything he's ever done before. And so even though it's a relatively small movie by blockbuster standards as far as scope and scale or whatever and cost, it is, I think, the most expensive A24 movie ever made. It's the biggest movie Alex Garland's ever made. And so you can kind of feel almost like him drifting and focusing on getting that stuff right as opposed to some of these other more typical A24, lack of a better term, like liminal artsy fartsy scenes. I just don't think all of those play very well or all of those are paced in the exact right spot in the movie. That's what I would say. It's not that what you're never looking at something going, why did they even film this? This is trash. It never goes that far. It just, there's certain scenes placed side by side that you just, I'm like, we need another beat or something in between here. But there's nowhere else to go. And I think that's part of the issue. The limitation of the film is because we're locked in with these four characters in their press vehicle. There's nowhere else to go. We can't like flip over to the White House. I mean, I guess we could, but that's not what this screenplay says. That's not the story they're trying to tell. So, for me, might be my least favorite of his films. I don't know if that's true. Still enjoyed it on a Letterboxd scale of 5. Accepting it for what it is. I'd probably give it a 3.5 out of 5. I don't think it's a game changer. I think the marketing for this movie has overhyped it to the point that you're going to go, that's it, right? Jaw-dropping, riveting. Garland makes the most searing portrait of American political landscape since Birth of a Nation or something. It's like, that's not what this is. Don't make it that. So I have some more thoughts. We'll get to it on the spoiler section for all our patrons over on patreon.com/bingemovies. If you are a patron, hold on. If you are not a patron, binge on.